Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode here on Rabbit Hole Stories. And he and I were just throwing bad jokes off camera again, but this is the way to start an episode. And today we had David Bailey on. He is the CEO of BTC Mac, BTC Media, the company behind BTC Magazine, obviously. And he gave us a good insight into all of the dunking that's been taking place on BTC Mac and what his philosophy was. And Ian, I don't care what people say, you have to speak to the guy to get to know him a bit personally. He has envious beard games, like he has a proper beard now. And I felt pumped. Like I bought some sats after that episode because I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, he's right. How about you?
Mate, I was just distracted by this guy's beard throughout the whole episode because that was not what I expected when he came online. But yeah, it was a great episode. And obviously, Bitcoin Magazine, controversial in the space, right? Which is kind of weird because, like, you put yourself out there, you want to do what's best for Bitcoin, and you're always going to get feedback, both good and bad, right? And obviously, we went into the whole ordinals discussion and things like that. And mate, he was so open and honest about it, which I fully respect, right? And he had his own sort of ideas as to why it is that he believes what he believes and why he's trying to push for, you know, Bitcoin in the way that he feels that it should be. And that's what it's all at the end, that's what it is at the end of the day, right? You are trying to sort of put yourself out there in this free marketplace that is Bitcoin. And yeah, it was a great conversation, and he gets a lot of shit in the space, but I think you should really sort of give this your finite time, and it won't be wasted, I'm sure. And let's jump into this rabbit hole now with David, and stay curious, guys.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to Rabbit Hole Stories. Today we're coming in quite internationally. It's Europe, and as one guest in America, we have the amazing David Bailey on. David, how's your day been so far?
What's up, everyone? My day is good. Happy all-time highs.
Yeah.
Literally just hit it. And before we were recording, we talked about your beard. What's up with that? Do you have some magic power going on?
Yeah, no, it's this was my bear market beard, and I was planning on shaving it at all-time highs. Now that we're there, I mean, I don't know. I can find a razor in the office. We can shave it live on this podcast, but I don't know. I'm getting cold feet because I kind of like the beard now, so we'll see what happens.
About 2 years ago, I shaved my beard off. I know it's not anything in comparison to what you've got going on right now. My beard envy is just at top level right now, but I shaved it off about 2 years ago, and my stepdaughter looked at me. She paused for like a second or two just to sort of like comprehend what was going on, and she cried, and I was like, okay, I'm never going to shave this beard again. Mate.
So Joel, Ian, where are y'all based?
I'm based over in London. You can probably tell by my very colloquial accent that I'm a Londoner through and through. I was born and bred here in London. So UK has always been my place of dwellings, if you like. And Joel, go on, over to you, mate.
So I used to live in London before the UK basically decided to kick me out because of visa issues. I was like, all right, I guess I get back home, and I live in Austria now, in Vienna.
Oh, cool. Yeah, right on.
Yeah, me and Joel actually met in a London Bitcoin meetup, and that's how this whole podcast started, to be honest. So that's the history behind us at Rabbit Hole Stories.
And speaking of Rabbit Hole Stories, David, let's get yours out of the way. How did you actually get into Bitcoin, and what made you stick?
Yeah, so I was in college, and I had interned at this hedge fund my junior year, and one of the guys I interned with sent me an article about the Silk Road my senior year of college. And so my first reaction was like, who would trade Ponzi money for drugs? And I was, you know, certain that Bitcoin was a scam, so I like kind of set out to prove to my buddy that it was a scam. And, you know, Bitcoin talk basically had all the information you could possibly want. Every possible reason that you think Bitcoin might not work, you could go and search Bitcoin talk, and you'd find like a 10,000, you know, page thread dissecting the issue. And so after a certain amount of time, I couldn't tell you why it wouldn't work. And, you know, Bitcoin is disrupting the biggest market that exists, which is value. There's nothing bigger than value. So if Bitcoin had a 1 in a million chance of working, and, you know, success means disrupting the biggest category that exists, value, then the price is astronomical. So it's like, even at 1 in a million, the expected value is still astronomical. So that's when I decided to buy my first Bitcoins. It was roughly $10 a Bitcoin at the time. And then that was November of 2012, and I've been on the journey ever since.
That's pretty cool. I mean, $10 a Bitcoin, just to think about that right now. And this is the thing, right? People always say to me, whenever they realize I'm into Bitcoin, one of the first things they say to me often is, oh, it's too late. That's like a common thing. And then they start to talk to me about, oh, I'm mainly all the other cryptocurrencies. Maybe it's an opportunity for me to get in that way. And that just drives me absolutely nuts, David. And I don't know if you have the same experience out in the,
yeah,
in the wild.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I almost didn't buy Bitcoin because I thought I was too late at $10. So that was like my number one reason why is like I was looking at it like these guys, they're guys that bought it for 10 cents a year ago and I'm buying it at $10. I'm a sucker.
Yeah.
So almost didn't buy it. Thank God I did. But yeah, I think people have no vision for where Bitcoin is going. And so they can only look at the past. They can't look into the future. And so based on the past, Bitcoin's expensive and it feels late. But if you have vision into where this is going, then you realize we're not even 1% into this journey. We're not even 0.01% into this journey. So yeah, no one is late. No one will be late for the next 10 years. So the best time to plant a tree is yesterday. The second best time to plant it is today.
I think when you've got an environment like you have here, particularly in UK and globally, actually, there's a lot of people struggling because the economy is fucked. Let's just say, call it as it is, right? And we all know why that is, fiat fuckery. And I think what you've got is a situation where people are sort of wanting some kind of money because it's hard to survive the day to day, right? And I think partly is a bit of greed involved in this, because I think they view cryptocurrency as a little bit of a money making scheme. And the reason why I say that is because I was at a birthday party last weekend for my nephew. And I was having a beer with one of the dads and he was like, oh, you're into Bitcoin, aren't you? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, oh, it's too late. And I was like, it's never too late. Just like we're talking about here. Right. And I gave him that pretty much rough example of my own experience as well. And we carried on the conversation. And I was like, look, you know, it's going up. You've got the halving coming up. It could get to 100,000. And he's like, oh, I think I might just wait until it gets to 100,000 and then start to short it. And I'm just like, why would you do that? So I don't know if people sort of like view Bitcoin as some sort of opportunity to get some sudden gains.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people don't understand what Bitcoin is. Mm. So again, it's like it's hard for them to have an impression of it. You know, 99.9% of people buy Bitcoin initially for the gains. You know, I was a libertarian when I got into Bitcoin. I was a Ron Paul guy. And so you know, Bitcoin definitely scratched the itch of, you know, I was into Austrian economics and, you know, Bitcoin filled that niche. But, you know, at the end of the day, the reason I bought it was because it was a financial calculation that, hey, I think this thing is undervalued. And so, you know, I think almost everyone gets into this for the number go up technology. And only once they gain an appreciation for what it is, do they see it in a broader sense and kind of it, the role that it has to serve in the world rather than just the role it has to serve in their own financial success. But we have to be real with ourselves that's why people get Bitcoin initially is for number go up. And I feel like that's one of the challenges this community has is that we're so scared of embracing that. When at the core of this movement, like number go up represents adoption of the technology. It represents us winning against the fiat system. It represents prosperity and power coming to our ideology. So number go up is a fantastic thing and we shouldn't hide from it or run from it.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And my question to you, what would the CEO of Bitcoin Magazine do to help put the signal of Bitcoin out there so people can understand it a bit better?
What's the question?
How will you, as in the Bitcoin Magazine, put that signal out there to help people better understand what Bitcoin is? Because I imagine it's quite a hard thing to do, right? In this abstract thing. So how are you at Bitcoin Magazine trying to represent Bitcoin and put that signal out there for everybody else?
So, you know, our company vision, our company mission is hyper Bitcoinization. And so we are always trying to lean into defining a future of where Bitcoin is going. Now, and maybe that future is not how it ends up playing out, but create a vision that we believe in and that other people can touch and experience and buy into as well. And, you know, move people to imagining a world where there is no fiat, and Bitcoin is the value system of humanity. And so we are very far ways away from that reality being possible. But I think that's the vision that you have to paint for people. And then, like, once you start having a conversation with someone about where this is going, then it's like, okay, well, it's going to 121 millionth of all things. Like, that's where this is going, you know? So, yeah, so we really try to lean into that. And then, you know, we also, our job at Bitcoin Magazine and more broadly the Bitcoin conference as well is to provide a platform for many different perspectives on Bitcoin. So, like, we have our own perspective, we have our own kind of view on what hyper Bitcoinization is. It's just one view. I've heard an infinite number of takes on how Bitcoin works, what it is, what it means, analogies to understand it. And so, you know, we want all of those views to have a platform to compete, you know, to be heard. And, you know, different messages speak to different people. And so, you know, the vision that we're selling for Bitcoin, it speaks to one type of person. You know, Bitcoin is mycelium, speaks to a totally different type of person, you know. So, but let all of the narratives flow. Let's see what sticks, what speaks to who, and let's just accelerate into the end state of this thing. Let's just get number to go up as fast as possible. Let's get users to go up as fast as possible. Let's get transactions to go up as fast as possible. Accelerate, accelerate, accelerate.
Yeah, and I guess, would you feel comfortable if we say Bitcoin Magazine is less one of the Bitcoin news blocks, let's call it, but more like a culture magazine where you surround everything that has to do with Bitcoin?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, we do news, but, you know, we found that news travels best on Twitter. And so, you know, it's like most people read headlines, they don't read the substance. Mm. So we're more of a culture publication, but we do news as well.
Nice. And, you know, having been to a few of your conferences, there's always... I mean, there's also conferences happening now this year, apparently, you know, that... try and be the, I'm going to call it out as the anti-Bitcoin Magazine conferences. You know, they don't try to make it, okay, it's hard to describe this politically correct. Fuck it. They don't try to make it as big as possible. They try to be, you know, very plebby. It's very organized, unorganized, sorry. And everyone sort of contributes. And this is where I go in. I go, okay, I've also had bad experiences at one of your conferences, namely Amsterdam last year. But mainly, your conferences have always been sort of the biggest stage. You get the biggest talkers in there. You also get controversial figures in there. People dance on stage. That's totally okay. People lose their fucking mind on Twitter about it. That's also okay. That helps the narrative again. But how do you feel about this? Because I imagine working for BTC Mag, you constantly get like called out for anything you do, I imagine. And especially with the conference, it is always either, oh, that was too big or too small or whatever in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a good question. So first off, like, I come from a day in Bitcoin where, you know, we invented the what a Bitcoin pleb was. I'm one of the original Bitcoin plebs. Okay, I started in Bitcoin. I was 22 years old. I had no money. I didn't have fucking shit. Okay, so first off, I know what it's like to be a Bitcoin pleb. Second off, you know, whatever toxic maximalism people think exists today, nothing is as toxic as the Bitcoin talk forms. So I was born in toxic maximalism. And, you know, none of this stuff at the end of the day phases me. Like, if this stuff really, you know, hurt me deeply when someone's mad on Twitter, then, like, I never would have made it this far. So you know, it is what it is. It just comes with the territory, first off. Second off, like, you know, I respect that the hustle of putting on events. I respect anyone who builds or creates something in Bitcoin. Okay, like, even if they build something that the whole vibe they're building is like, hey, we're the anti-Bitcoin magazine, I don't care. Go for it. Good job, man. If you can build a community and an audience, you're advancing Bitcoin. Like, all of our bags are in Bitcoin. All we care about is Bitcoin number go up. So, you know, if there's a market for the anti-Bitcoin magazine market, go for it. You know, the next thing I'd say is, like, different people like different things at events. And so, like, our, you know, when we did the Bitcoin conference, we were the only Bitcoin conference. Like, I'm not gonna say we invented the idea, because we kind of modeled the event off of the first Bitcoin conference I ever went to, which was called Bitcoin 2013, which happened in 2013 and 2014 and then stopped happening. And so when we went Bitcoin only in 2018, we were like, hey, we have to bring back a Bitcoin conference because there was like Consensus, there was all these big crypto conferences. And it's like, we need a Bitcoin conference. So we had to kind of invent what that meant. And Bitcoin 2019, which was a 2,000 person conference, was one of the best conferences that people have been to. Maybe Bitcoin 2021 was better for other reasons, but Bitcoin 2019 was really something special. And so, you know, our vision for doing the Bitcoin conference is that Bitcoin is king. All cryptos are downstream from Bitcoin. The issues that matter happen in Bitcoin, and then they flow down to affect the rest of crypto. And so, you know, Bitcoin deserves to have the biggest event in the world. It deserves to be the best party in the world. It deserves to showcase freedom for the world. Like, we're building a countercultural movement that includes art, music, technology, money. Like, this is a festival for freedom, and, you know, it should be fucking awesome. Like, that was like the view that we had. And so, you know, for us, it was like, let's scale this event to as big as we can possibly go. Like, if we can make a 1 million person event, let's do a 1 million person event. Like, we don't consider ourselves competing with like Consensus or South by Southwest. We're competing with, like, you know, people going on pilgrimage to Mecca. We're competing with like the Vatican on Christmas Mass. That's who we're competing with. We have our own ideological movement that we're building. So we've always wanted to go big. And that's like a style of an event. And not everyone's into that. And like, I think there needs to be other types of events that are focused on the technical side or focused on, I mean, there's different things that people want out of events. So anyway, I no shade on throwing a 300 person event. Now, there are certain events that I would say like kind of fall in between the middle of those two things where like maybe they don't have a specialty. They're smaller than our event, and they also frame themselves as like the anti-Bitcoin MAG event. Okay, I'll just throw out some examples of this type of event. So this would be like BTC Prague. This would be like Pacific Bitcoin. These are like events that throw a lot of shade our way. Okay, well, let's just like call a spade a spade. If you look at both of those products are almost exact clones of our event. Like, you know, they have the same ticket types. They have the same content types. They have the same stage configurations. They have the same festival environment. They have, they're 95% the same product. And then if you look at the speaker lineups and you take their programming and you lay it against our programming, it's 95% the same programming. Like, there's a lot of the same faces. What they've done is, you know, the speakers that we have that maybe are more open to crypto, or the speakers that we have that are maybe more controversial in the community, they'll prune those speakers. So, and then they'll be like, well, we're the better product. And it's like, I don't know if they're the better product. They're like a slightly pruned version of our product. You know, maybe they can make the case that they're like a more pure Bitcoin event. I'm not sure. I don't even know what that fucking means. But yeah, so like, you know, if that helps them sell tickets, you know, go for it. But I don't lose any sleep over it at night. And, you know, I think our mission is to have like a editorial ethos and standard that we stick to and that we're consistent about. And, you know, one thing that about being the biggest conference is that when you tell someone that they can't speak or sponsor your conference, which we turn away hundreds of sponsors a year, we will have thousands of people write in who want to speak. And like the vast majority we're having to turn down. And people get pissed, like especially companies when they're like, hey, we want to come get a $100,000 sponsorship or a $500,000 sponsorship. And we're like, yeah, I'm sorry, you can't sponsor the conference. You don't have a Bitcoin product or service. They flip out. Like, they don't take that information well. So you have to be able to defend why they can't participate in the event. So we've had to develop kind of like a clear cut, hey, this is what's inbound, this is what's out of bound. And so, you know, when we said, hey, like, okay, like you have to have a Bitcoin product or service, and we interact with something like Ordinals, and Ordinals wants to be a part of the conference. They want to talk about what they're doing. It's like, is this a Bitcoin product or service? Does this leverage or use Bitcoin in some way? Okay, de facto, it does. Like, there's that's an undeniable thing. So it's like, okay, well, then on what basis do we have to tell someone that they can't participate other than, like, we've just subjectively decided we don't like you, and so we're not going to let you. And other conferences, I won't say which one specifically, like, they won't let Ordinals projects or participate or speak. And I've actually asked one of these conferences, what is the basis that y'all decide that? Like, how do y'all decide who can and can't participate? And they told me, if Adam Back likes it, it's Bitcoin. And it's like, bro, that is not what we're about. That's not what we do. So, you know, like, I think my challenge to our peers that would criticize our, like, with the decisions that we make, is put your standards up in public. And, you know, like, take the same scrutiny that we take on our standards, take it on your standards. And, you know, no one really challenges these other people's standards because they're not the biggest. But I can tell you, if they became the biggest, like, they would. So, you know, so that's a long, very long-winded answer to your question.
No, that's perfect. That's perfect. Because I think it covers a lot of bases there. So first of all, I'm glad you actually made the comparison to Prague, because... Yeah, Ian, we've also been... Oh, fuck, we partied together, actually. You've also been in Prague, yeah. Sorry, forgot. And I went to the conference, and I immediately had the same vibe. I was like, oh, cool, this is like a BTC Mac conference, you know. I'm just going to call it professional. Like, you have a big stage, everything is organized.
It was nice. Dude, looked like a great event. I'm no shade at that event.
And as a European, it was also cool to see, to have a bit more of the European culture behind it. And, you know, they did a great job. The venue was actually quite big for European standards. And I actually got into an aftermath in October. I think it was even after BTC Amsterdam, where people went like, oh, but, you know, it was sort of the middle figure to BTC Mac. And I go like, well, why is that? Oh, it's because of Ordinals. And like, I went, okay, like, I'm not into art. I have no fucking clue if it makes sense to buy a frog or a dog or whatever, you know, at this point. But, like, you have to admit that there is actually some building going on with Bitcoin at that point. And, like, isn't the whole ethos behind Bitcoin that you can do whatever the fuck you want with your money? So, like, who are we to judge, right, what they do? So that kind of went a bit sour. So I got blocked on Twitter. And I then started noticing that pattern that... It's what you say. It's okay if anyone has a different opinion than others do. And it's actually helpful if we all don't agree on the same thing. But at the end of the day, if it helps people get to Bitcoin, that helps. And is that also the reason, I think you put it out 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, maybe at this point, your editorial decisions about layer two solutions.
Yeah.
Or your statement or something. And in it, you clearly mentioned, okay, even if it has a token, if it's pegged to the Bitcoin ecosystem, we're good with it. Is this something you're looking at constantly and go like, okay, we will evolve in that as the layers also evolve? Speaking of what you mentioned previously, maybe we're wrong with something. Or is this also clearly the same thing as with the Ordinals, where you go, hey, they use some form of Bitcoin or some connection to the ecosystem. So we'll take a look at it, we'll feature it, and we'll let actually the market decide if they survive or not. What's the reasoning behind you guys is going in there?
So first off, you know, the editorial policy that we put out on layer twos, it was a, we had to do something because there's a flood of layer twos. What things calling themselves layer twos coming to the market right now. And so there is nuance required in this discussion, because not all of these projects are the same. And so we needed to create some sort of definitions so that we can just have a precise conversation about, like, what are we talking about? Because if everything calls itself a layer two, then a layer two doesn't mean anything. If everything starts calling it a side chain doesn't mean anything. So we are trying to create just a way to have a useful conversation, and it absolutely can evolve as time goes on. So, you know, one thing that I've learned over the past 12 years is that most people are wrong about most things, especially in Bitcoin. And so we don't pretend to have all the answers. Like, we are, you know, we are learning as we go. So, but I also know that no one else has all the answers. And so people who act like they have all the answers, they're just full of shit. So, you know, in terms of the Ordinals editorial policy and the layer two editorial policy. So like we've had a macro view for a long time. Like we're what you would call the old school Bitcoin maximalist view, which is anything that's useful, that's created in crypto will eventually get built in Bitcoin, and Bitcoin will cannibalize the crypto market. Like that's, we've always felt like Bitcoin will eat whatever is in crypto that's valuable. And, you know, when we saw Ordinals, the reason we were so early to Ordinals is because we had guys on our team that were into Counterparty. And I don't know if y'all know what Rare Pepes are, but they were into Rare Pepes. And Rare Pepes is like a cult scene that has existed in Bitcoin for a really long time. And so we've had guys that have wanted to have like Rare Pepes at our conference, or like Bitcoin-based NFTs at our conference for years, but they're like, hey, you know, like we can't do it yet because it's not truly native to Bitcoin. And when Ordinals came along, they were like, okay, this is like nerdy, dorky NFT shit on Bitcoin, properly on Bitcoin. Like, let's play with this. So that's why we were so early to it. And I think when we first embraced it, you know, it was kind of sexy to hate on us for doing so, because it had become so normalized to hate on NFTs in general because they weren't on Bitcoin. Like, everything that's not on Bitcoin, we've developed such great talking points for shitting on because it's not on Bitcoin, which I understand. Like, we're shilling our own bags. We're shilling the Bitcoin bags. And so, like, there's a little bit cognitive dissonance that when NFTs come to Bitcoin and we've been shitting on NFTs for so long, it's like, how do we make that work with what we've been saying for all this time? So, you know, when we embraced Ordinals, there weren't a lot of people using them. Now, go forward, let's say 18 months or 16 months, there's over a million people that are using Ordinals right now. We have cannibalized already hundreds of millions of dollars from crypto and hundreds of thousands of users from crypto. And people are starting to see it. They weren't seeing it at that point in time. Now it's kind of undeniable. People are seeing it. And so, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see if like these people that have really criticized our view on like being open-minded to the Ordinals community, if they change that perspective, because as it grows, it's going to get really difficult and really messy to navigate like what is and what isn't kosher, you know, what's out of back approved and what's not out of back approved. That's a very difficult standard to keep measuring by. But our general view was like, Ordinals is capturing market share from crypto. It's bringing it to Bitcoin. There is some cool stuff that people can do with it. There's some nerdy stuff that you can do with inscriptions that are cool. And then there's a ton of speculative gambling that is happening on top of it with Ordinals. Like, I'm not here saying that any frog JPEG is like a valuable asset. It is complete speculation and gambling. But guess what? People love speculation and gambling. The entire shitcoin complex is just people there because it's a casino that they're there to gamble at. In the real world, I don't know if you've ever been to Las Vegas. Las Vegas is popping off. People love going to Las Vegas. It's entertainment. So, you know, Ordinals, to my mind, they represent people who are looking to be entertained. And it is gambling. I don't think there's one person you can meet who's buying frog JPEGs that are like, no, frog JPEGs are a balanced part of a portfolio and are a real asset that is going to $1 trillion. Like, no one thinks that. So
I guess if they do, they work for Multicoin Capital. No, that's what's a dirty sidekick.
So like we're looking at like this is like, okay, like there's some cool stuff here that people are using Bitcoin for. And then there's a casino getting built on top of it that uses Bitcoin as like the chips. And people are playing in this casino. They're using Bitcoin and they're gambling using Bitcoin rather than gambling using, you know, Ethereum or Solana. And so that's like a net win for Bitcoin. And at the same time, they're downloading Bitcoin wallets. They're buying Bitcoin. They're paying miners fees to use transactions. These are all positive things for Bitcoin. And then, you know, in a bigger picture sense is like our vision for Bitcoin is one where all financial transactions that happen in the world happen on top of Bitcoin. Like, and it's going to happen in layers. It's going to require, you know, like we're not going to go to on the base chain, you know, 100 trillion transactions happening. We understand that. So how do we get from where we are now, which is 200 million transactions a year, to this future state where all financial transactions can happen on top of Bitcoin? And in our view, the path to getting there is having fees on chain. That once there's a fee market on Bitcoin, then there's an incentive for people to develop the scaling solutions we actually need to get there. And I used to be a Lightning maxi. I'm one of the most active investors in Lightning companies in the world. And, you know, I kind of had this view, because I'm an idiot, that Lightning was like a magic bullet to solve our scaling problems. And as time went on, and as I worked with more and more Lightning companies, I realized like Lightning is not a magic bullet. It is a legit thing. It has a very legit future. It is one solution to a need for scaling Bitcoin. And I use Lightning all the time. But it is not some panacea solution for us going from where we are today to, you know, 10 billion people using Bitcoin every day as their native currency. So our view is like grow the fees, grow the use of Bitcoin. With more people using Bitcoin, the fees will go up. As the fees go up, it will tell the market what type of scaling solutions we need in order to onboard new users. And that's how Bitcoin will move forward into the future. And so that's kind of like our macro thesis. And, you know, these layer twos showing up, you know, we didn't necessarily know how many were going to show up later, but we knew when we were supporting ordinals, like, hey, we're going to need more layer twos to come and compete. And now they're flooding into the market. And like, this is what we want. We need to have the battle for the layer twos be as intense and as brutal as the battle for Bitcoin mining. Think about how just cutthroat Bitcoin mining is and how every little inch of efficiency matters. We need that at layer two. We don't just need like one layer two that's like a bunch of academics. We need like hundreds of layer twos battling it out, like who's the best layer two, and let's let the market figure out like what's the best solution. And you know, it's like may not be a PhD that figures out the best solution. It may be some 16-year-old kid from Tibet that figures out what the best solution is. That's the beauty of an open permissionless system. So like let the ideas come to market. Let's see what happens. And I can tell you that like that thesis is playing out. The number of layer twos is already 50 plus that are coming to market right now. I'm willing to bet you that by the end of this year, there will be hundreds of layer twos trying to come to market. And you know, something will come from that. I don't know what, but something will come from that. So, that's we covered a lot of ground in that answer too. I'm sorry. These are complex questions you're asking. So
no, I love it. This is the sort of discussion that I think we need more often in the Bitcoin ecosystem, to be fair. And I think when you're on Bitcoin Twitter, I start to see like these forming of different camps and ideologies, and people I think are in danger of following the narratives of their Bitcoin hero or the person that they align with their sort of mindset or ideology. And they don't really then allow themselves to fully open up their minds to explore other possibilities within Bitcoin and to help it evolve and be open-minded in that regard, right? Because at the end of the day, Bitcoin provides you an opportunity to do what the fuck you want, anything. You can build upon, 100%. Experiment, yeah, and collaborate, compete. You've got these conferences that are, you know, shitting all over Bitcoin magazine trying to compete with you, but pretty much cut and paste of your methods of doing conferences. And I think, you know, gatekeeping Bitcoin or the building that's going on within the Bitcoin ecosystem, so it's not allowing a certain community from that ecosystem to that sort of conference, sort of like dulls the noise, and it's like perpetuating this kind of one ideology, one narrative, and it's sort of it's ostracizing the whole section that could actually be putting some signal out there to grow and invite more people in to sort of bring us into that hype of Bitcoinized world. Am I talking nonsense?
No, 100%. And okay. I mean, like, and I don't want to, like, again, we don't have all the answers. And there's at Bitcoin Magazine a lot of disagreement about, like, every person has their own views at Bitcoin Magazine. We encourage people to think for themselves. We don't have, like, a company policy of this is, like, you must think this way to work here. So, like, we are seeing it play out and we're learning in real time as this goes. And there is a lot of bullshit that's going to come into the market and a lot of scams that are going to come into the market. And so like there needs to be a diligence about identifying what those things are and calling them out and helping people not lose money. But like you can't sacrifice all new ideas because you're afraid of bad actors. There will always be bad actors. So, you know, and I think, you know, I think that your point about people getting captured by narratives, 100%, that's happening. And we've even talked to people who create the narratives and then they're like, I can't even move away from the narrative I've created because now I'm captured by my audience who bought into my narrative and now I can't evolve the narrative. So, I think at the end of the day, this is all going to work itself out. So like, I think, you know, if we're sitting here a year from now and there are 50 million new people that have come to Bitcoin, right, you know, those new people are going to have a new vision of Bitcoin. And I also think like we don't control Bitcoin. Like I don't control what the vision of Bitcoin is. Just because I believe in hyper Bitcoinization doesn't mean that's the future of Bitcoin. And I see people on Twitter who say, hey, you know what? Ossify Bitcoin 100%. We don't need to be an asset for everyone. In fact, if we only have 10 million people that use it, perfect. That's fantastic. And that's all Bitcoin needs to be. I disagree with those people. And so I am ideologically competing with those people that I think my vision for Bitcoin of everyone using Bitcoin is better than that vision of Bitcoin. And we're going to see who wins and who's right. But they may be right. And I fully embrace, like, they have as much claim to being right as I have to being right. But we're going to test to see who's right and we're going to battle for it and let's see what happens.
Yeah, and I think everyone in his Bitcoin journey, if he's been to like a few meetups, events and such, he had his, I'm going to call it the fuck Bitcoin magazine phase where they go like, you know, because A, B and C in the commentary says like, oh, they're bad boys. You kind of go like, yeah, they're bad boys, you know, then you realize like, actually, you know, I mean, yeah, again, they might do stuff I don't like, but like at the end of the day, it helps. It's getting more people on board. And what I personally struggle with as someone who works in marketing, the whole aspect of you can sell Bitcoin to someone, and I'm not talking about the asset, but like the idea, is being so villainized in the Bitcoin community to a point where you go, if I'm telling, yeah, we're a Bitcoin business, we're in it to make money because that's how the business stays afloat. And you might need venture capital. You might need, you know, an outside sources helps. You might have a business structure similar to you guys where you have, a venture part or a venture arm involved and you have the magazine. But that's how it works. Like, that's how you get businesses going. Is there something, if you would be the Adam Back of Bitcoin, David, as to use your quote, and you could change something immediately, what would it be in a business context you would like to see changed in the Bitcoin community that we actually get there more faster? Because sometimes it feels like Bitcoin businesses put growth underneath the keeping the ethos alive, so making everything as pure as possible, where I think you should put growth at the top of the list and then try to make it as good and as sound as it possibly could be. But I'm interested in your take.
Yeah, so I definitely believe like we need to honor and respect the ethos. But at the heart of the ethos is capitalism. Like Bitcoin works because of incentives. Bitcoin is the apex of capitalism, apex of capitalistic technology. Like we are bringing free markets to our money. And our money is the most socialized, controlled, you know, regulated, government dictated technology that exists. And so, you know, I hate to see like on Twitter where like it's almost like capitalism is demonized and it's like almost like this like it's almost like the Bitcoin version of woke ideology of like, you know, is advanced. I don't know. I don't quite understand it. So like businesses need to make money. Like that's how businesses work. And that's what makes Bitcoin valuable. And to demonize that at your own peril, because I can tell you, like, if we're going to take Bitcoin to the masses, if we're going to onboard the business community, we're going to onboard them because Bitcoin is the best. Bitcoin wins on the features, on the technology, not because it wins on the purest, ideological grounds. Like that's not what's going to make Bitcoin win. It is why libertarianism has never advanced, you know, as a political party in the United States. So, uh, I I think we have to embrace capitalism. But that, like, we also, we have to be honest to the market. And I think, like, that's the big, like, differentiator is, like, if as long as you are honest with people and straightforward with people about what's going on, then the room for experimentation is much wider. And so, like, you know, yeah, let's embrace ordinals. Let's let people play with ordinals. But, like, let's make sure that we let people know they're going to a casino to gamble. And I don't think that that's going to change people's interest in wanting to play with this stuff. It's just going to give them the right state of mind to interact with it rather than telling them, hey, you're investing into the next S&P 500 or something. And then they end up getting wrecked because they had the wrong mindset that they approached it with. So I think, you know, honesty, but with a focus on capitalism and making money. And then, you know, on, as far as our business, like our core profit engine at the company now is the conference. Like that is what makes the economic model of our business work. We have a venture fund. And I think, like, people think that Bitcoin Magazine is, like, you know, I've seen criticism, like, Bitcoin Magazine's there to shill my bags or shill the venture fund's bags. The reason why we have a venture fund is because we've been in Bitcoin a very long time. We own a lot of Bitcoin and we've been very successful with our Bitcoin. And we love Bitcoin and we want to see Bitcoin be massively successful. And so, you know, if you, Joel or Ian, had, you know, $50 million or $100 million in Bitcoin, you might say, hey, I want to invest some of this money into cool ideas and Bitcoin companies and try to accelerate what's happening here. That's why we started the venture fund. And, you know, what we invest into, it's not like we invest in the shit and then we go into Bitcoin Magazine and we say, shill this stuff. Instead, it actually works the opposite way. Bitcoin Magazine's like, hey, look at this new cool idea that's happening in Bitcoin. We're like, oh shit, that's interesting. We should start investing into those things. And so it's actually Bitcoin Magazine that leads, like, the thesis. And then we're like, let's invest into the thesis. So it's, you know, our venture fund is going to be very profitable. This cycle, like, we've carved out a niche that no one else was in and we were first to invest into it. So we are going to make a lot of money from the venture fund. But, you know, we didn't set up the venture fund to do that. Like, we didn't know that this was all going to play out. We set this venture up a long time ago. So I just want to be, like, clear, like, the venture fund was more like a passion project, let's say, or passion project wanting to make money. And, you know, now people are like, because it's performed really well or because it's invested into a lot of stuff, like, people want to, like, say it's all contrived or whatever. And it's just not. Like, our business model works around the conference. We sell tickets to a conference. We sell sponsorships to a conference. That's what pays the bills. And like, Bitcoin Magazine basically barely breaks even. So that's kind of like the overall model.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, a lot of people, if they don't, like, work within the industry directly or have close contacts, they imagine things like, oh, you know, Bitcoiners love to, like, you know, give you a few grand of their Bitcoin just to donate to this project. And if you actually look in closely, sometimes it's quite sad how, like, pathetic people hold on to their Bitcoin. And I get it, you know, the whole HODL aspect, no doubt about it, especially if you don't own a lot of Bitcoin compared to what maybe a venture fund would do. But then you kind of need these investments to keep the companies afloat. And I'm saying this is someone who is working at a Bitcoin company that is being ventured by EgoDev in this case and a couple of other Bitcoin ventures. And if they wouldn't exist, we still would have probably made it, but it would be super fucking hard to get to the numbers we are today. And guess what? If we actually do something in Europe, it has an impact on the Bitcoin community. So that's the whole idea behind it, right? I also want to go down into one last thing before we wrap things up. I know you've been pretty vocal about the whole, you know, Barry situation, like the DCG group and all that stuff. And I think there was a point in time where CoinDesk was for sale and you guys were either imagined going into it or looking at the offers. And now sort of Bullish has taken over and things. How do you feel about it looking back now, probably, what is it now, 9 months later, where you see that CoinDesk has actually been sort of ripped off, Bullish came in. Speaking of, like, driving the narrative, I mean, you know, you could make the case there that, like, okay, they use CoinDesk to their advantage as well. But how do you compare specifically that portion of BTC Mac to things like CoinDesk and these crypto magazines in general?
Yeah, so first off, I generally think about it as, like, we're in two completely different businesses. Like, we're not a journalistic, like, magazine. We're not a some objective observer watching Bitcoin, and we're trying to like objectively, you know, like, is Bitcoin good or is it bad? Like, no, we have an agenda. Like, Bitcoin is good. Like, we're going to advance Bitcoin adoption. Like, we're going to invest in companies. We're going to shill the shit out of Bitcoin. Like, we are completely 100% aligned with advancing Bitcoin. And so we're more of like an advocacy company for Bitcoin. Like, we're not, like, we care that Bitcoin is successful. We're not just passive observers of it. So I think like CoinDesk has always kind of been a passive observer, like documenting what's going on. And that's never been like our kind of focus or target. In terms of, you know, the GBTC dynamic. So, you know, we took, first off, I think Barry Silbert's a criminal. And I think like what happened at GBTC, like there's a lot that's going to come out, and what happened at Genesis. And so it was a bad situation. We also saw an opportunity to take a big stake in GBTC and push GBTC to allow people to redeem and do the right thing. And so we were able to kind of align our investment interest with, you know, making the industry a better place in general and not tolerating, you know, a million people getting ripped off. So we're very happy with how that played out. We're very happy to watch the ETFs come live. And I think it's like we're seeing every day the effect that that's having. I think it's going to bring a bunch of people to Bitcoin. What happened with CoinDesk? We were never seriously looking at buying it. We were mostly trolling. And, you know, there was prices floating around about what it was going to go for, et cetera. You know, I wish Bullish the success with it. I don't really care about it. I think we're going to take crypto to zero. I think, you know, all these other tokens outside of Bitcoin will go to zero. And so I imagine eventually CoinDesk will pivot to being a Bitcoin-only publication because none of this other stuff will exist. So we look forward to competing with them in the future. But as of right now, we don't really look at them as competitors.
David, it's been a fascinating conversation with you. Thank you for joining us here at Rabbit Hole Stories and for your finite time. But at the end of each of our episodes, what we do is that all roads lead back to Bitcoin challenge for each and every one of our guests. And we're going to give you a word or phrase, and you're going to have to try and relate that back to Bitcoin somehow. So, David, are you ready for the all roads lead back to Bitcoin challenge?
Yeah, let's go. Let's go.
Bro, how does country music lead back to Bitcoin? Seeing as you're from Nashville, or in Nashville. So country music, how does that lead back to Bitcoin?
Okay, so music more broadly, every movement, every revolution is driven by culture, is driven by music, is driven by art. So first off, like music is going to have a big role to play in taking Bitcoin adoption from 100 million people to 10 billion people. So that's number one. Now, what does country music specifically have to be as part of this? You know, Tennessee, Nashville, country music, it represents rural America. It represents the part of America that has been left out of the monetary system. You know, none of us rednecks, we consider ourselves the redneck contingent of Bitcoin. None of the rednecks are invited to the country clubs in Connecticut and in New York. We're flyover country. And for once, there's a money that's for the rednecks. It's for the blue collar worker. It's for the people who have been forgotten. We're forgotten no more. So country music is about the countercultural movement to take the middle of America that's been left behind and to take them to the top of the pack and to have them be treated the same as every other citizen, no matter if they live on Fifth Avenue, New York, or whether they live, you know, in the countryside of Tennessee. So that's how I'd relate it back to Bitcoin.
That's a perfect answer. And we're still obviously proving that. In fact, all roads do still lead back to Bitcoin. David, before we wrap up, is there anything you want to shill, and where can people find you?
Yeah, so I'll shill our conferences. So we're in the process of taking Bitcoin global, the Bitcoin conference global. So we have our first conference in Asia coming up in Hong Kong. We have a conference in Nashville in July. We're going to have a conference in Europe in October. And then we have one conference that we haven't announced yet coming maybe next week. That's going to be happening in December. You know, our ask is like, hey, you don't have to like us. You don't have to agree with us. But help us shill Bitcoin to every breathing, living person on this planet. We have a lot of work to do, and we look forward to working with all of y'all.
Nice, nice. And I guess the best place to find you is X or Twitter, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect.
Just don't
perfect.
Be offended by any of my tweets.
I mean, even if you're offended by tweets, you're a snowflake anyway. So like, you know, maybe you should be on the internet. Yeah. David, it was a pleasure having you.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah, no, this is awesome. I like the podcast.
Nice, nice. And to all of our listeners, as always, thanks for your finding time and stay curious.